Good afternoon.
Hey, it's John here.
Rob,
How are
hey
you?
Rob, it's Mike.
Hey Mike, how are you?
I'm good.
John?
John and I sit basically next to each other, but he calls in separately, so it's okay. I try to stay far away from him.
You guys are funny. That's
We try our
great.
best. So a couple of questions that I've been thinking about. And one of the dilemmas that we are running into is it's a good conflict between John and me, is that John, when I start to go through the list of who I want to eliminate, and we worked on more of that this week, it's always, but she's a nice person, and I said, so my question for you is, when he goes through something like that, I have a separate number that, if I move them all into one number, he can service those clients. Does that work or does it not work? I'm not going to service them at all. And as long as he can keep my schedule the way it's supposed to be, what's your thoughts on something like that?
I've got you as a client associate. What's your role here? Am I wrong? Are you an FA?
I wouldn't say I'm an FA, but I'm very involved with the business and making decisions on trading and buying
And
and selling and things like
Rob,
that.
he's fully licensed, so from that standpoint, it's good.
Yeah. The answer is no.
Okay.
No. No, no. Your time is as valuable, John, as Mike's time. And when we're cleaning a book, we want to clean it. We don't want to pass accounts around and hide them and put them in the ceiling and the floorboards and the closet, because they call. And when they call, that you give them the same time you give your best clients. What we want is new, bigger clients, ones that look like the top 20% of your practice. What we want to do is get rid of people that are unproductive and take up time and aren't the future of our practice. And so you got to be pretty tough about it. It's like, me going, my wife cleaning the closets or cleaning the house, and me going through the trash looking for things she's thrown away that I want to keep.
That's a great analogy. That's a great
Okay.
analogy. I
So
got
we both agree as to what's going to get thrown away, and then she does it, and I stay out of the trash. And I'll never miss any of it, right? You never miss it. It's gone. And
I do that a little differently. I go into the garage and tell her not to come in.
Yeah,
I just throw the crap out. So,
right. Good. Good for you. Yeah. So that's a good, it's a good question. It comes up all the time. It's usually the other way around. It's usually,
yeah.
no.
And it's just, it's just, I guess it's the mental aspect of, dealing with these clients. I had a couple of further conversations with people as to what I'm planning on doing, and they're fine with
Right.
that. And nobody seems to be pushing back when I have the conversation. I had one of my close friends in yesterday. Actually, when he was walking out, I said, I want the rest of the money. But it just, I went through it with him and said, here's my game plan. This is what I'm doing. He said, good for you. I'm happy for you. So it's not, it's for the couple of times that I've had conversations last week, and I've been just jammed, Rob, so jammed. So just bear with me. But everybody is positive about it. I don't have anybody that's sitting there going, really? So, but I probably haven't gotten down to the people I'm sitting there going, where they would say, are you keeping me? I haven't gotten to that point yet. So, we've basically taken the accounts and broken them down. And they're now in a position where we're looking at households, seeing who they are, thinking about what might potentially have more assets when I have this conversation. And then we've broken down the business to mutual funds, how we're going to work on that, what we can get rid of, what we can put into fee-based revenue. But again, that's it's a hard process. It's a lot harder than I would have thought that it was.
Yeah, and you know, you can make it harder too. You don't have to make it too hard. I mean, you're being very exhaustive about breaking it in different pieces and.
Right. Well, no, the mutual funds was to something else, but that's fine.
Yeah. My, I would, you know, look at them as a whole client and say, you know, do they meet my minimums? Are they ever going to meet my minimums? Are they somebody that needs financial planning and my attention? And you know, do they, you know, what's their? Remember, there are 11 criteria for determining whether or not a client makes the minimum. And George Kemp used all 11 and only had 33 out of 640 clients that passed all 11 screens. You don't have to be that draconian, but you want to make sure that you're not keeping too much. Because remember, every client represents time. And your practice has got to be a growth practice where you almost look at it as if you're starting over again with nothing. So anything that that precludes you from spending time in acquisition is a cost center to you. So you want to try and get as skinny as you can, as light as you can, so you can go fast.
The other question that I have is that I'm now partially involved with the other book that I'm going to take over at the end of the year, and yep. I'm not actively involved in those accounts now other than conversation. So do I just iron out my book at this point in time with the, you know, the 90 million or whatever's in there, and then slowly ease the other one in and go through the process again? Because what I'd like to do is have it probably June, when it's 6 months left for him, is to sit down with his accounts and cull them out that way and say, you know, I told John to print up, you know, there's a split number that he and I have that's separate from mine. And the answer is to print that up so I can look at it and say, you know, who does what business, and then I can individually go with him and say, tell me about this person, tell me about this person, you know, so I understand everything that he has, and then I can decide what I want to get rid of.
Right. So you do that separately.
Yeah, okay. I just want to make sure.
You want your business up and running 100% before you try and integrate his into it.
Right, okay.
Okay, so you want to be done. So that gives you, you know, it gives you a little time, but you want to use that as your deadline.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right, good. Other questions about the process? Are you using the scheduler yet?
No, I just got it last week, and I've been, you know, between running to Philly the day before I spoke to you and coming back, I've been just a little bit behind, so I've got to get working with that. I have it. Cindy sent it to me, or it was somebody from the organization.
Right.
So I've got to get up and running with that.
Yeah, and that's really, John, that's your baby, right?
Yes.
Sorry. Take it off mute.
Yes, I did.
Yeah, you know, that's really what he's got to start working on. And we pretty much work with a full calendar, you know, so we've got to work that in. For example, today was a day where I had a half hour call before we called you. You know, this was about, because I'm going away on a Janny trip where I'm working. So we went through that. So that was today. And, you know, the morning I had another conference call at 11:30. Then I met a client for lunch who's well aware of everything that I'm going to do. He's actually bringing me another at least $500,000 at the end of the year, and he's already worth 4.2 with me. So not a bad deal. But, you know, that's yeah, so my calendar is always full.
All right, so here's what we got. We're a little behind. okay? Even though you have a small book, you're still a little behind.
Yeah.
You should be meeting with people, signing them up, dropping them into your scheduler, handing them their Mini-Me folders, and you should have a folder for each client. Okay, by the fourth week.
Okay.
All right. So you still have time, but you have things to do, but not so much that you have a good excuse for being behind. Okay.
Yep.
So get caught up. You need to call out the clients. You need to sign up this week. You need to start signing them up because you're meeting with people. When you have these meetings, you've got to take advantage of that and hand them their Mini-Me folder. You can't be just meeting with people and telling them about it at this point. You should be signing them up for a time and handing them their Mini-Me folder and tell them how this is going to work. Because you want it up and running. Because then we have a chance to have you use it for, you know, let's say a month from now, you're up and running. Then you can say to me, hey, what about this? And what about that? What about this? So you'll have questions that arise from the actual activity of going through and calling all your clients and meeting with them and scheduling them and all that stuff. So we don't want to be talking theoretics here. We need action.
Yeah, I mean, in many cases, it'll be a phone call. And we can,
in most
we can
cases,
because we don't do a lot of, I don't get a lot of face-to-face meetings.
Well, you're gonna.
Yeah.
12-4.
Ultimately,
12-4-2.
Yeah.
Okay. It's
no,
12-4-2.
I understand that, but you know, we're also going through, as you do, is that we have people leaving right around Passover.
Right.
So.
I know. So you want to get to them quick here to make sure you're seeing them before they take off.
Right.
Okay.
Yep.
Because you don't want to be going to New York to meet with people, you know.
Well, I do.
I mean,
if
you
I can go visit my daughter, but yeah, I was gonna say if I want to go visit my daughter,
right.
So.
Yeah. So think of that when you're doing your scheduling. Think of batch processing people together. Meaning.
Okay.
So I'm gonna go to New York. I'm gonna visit my daughter over the weekend. So Monday, let's say I want to put. Monday and Tuesday, I'll be seeing clients, or Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I'll be seeing clients in New York. So I can see three clients a day, 9 o'clock, 12 o'clock, and 4 o'clock. Okay. Give myself some space in between. So when they ask, you know, are I going to tell them when they need to be scheduled, you control that. By telling them, hey, when I'm in New York, I'll see you 9 o'clock Monday morning, or will that work for you? No, 12 o'clock will work. Okay, good. We'll have lunch when I'm there. Okay, or the other guy will have dinner, or we'll have meet for you know, tea at 4. The idea is, and then the next day, Tuesday, 9, 12, and 4, or 3, whatever
right.
You guys want. You could have, you know, 9, 12, 9, 12, 3, and dinner. You could have 4 meetings a day for 2 days. So that's what I mean about, you know, scheduling according to your patterns rather than just reading the book and doing it the way somebody else does it.
Right.
You
right.
want to think to yourself. Think to yourself, I want to work, you know, I don't want to work Fridays or something, or I want to do all my calling in the morning and have the afternoons to prospect, or you know, you've got office obligations, you've got meetings, you know, like you said, you got out of town meetings when, you know, you can't predict when they're going to be, so all the time, but you know, that's a challenge for
well,
you to.
But I can still make, even if I'm out of town, as long as it's on the calendar, you know, I can take.
You can make the call.
If I'm in another office, I can make the call. I've had a conference call with you being sitting in another office. So,
sure.
You know, that's
absolutely.
That's not an issue. as long as I'm prepared and take the file with me. Let me actually go back just a second. So what do we want to have in the initial, as you call it, the mini-me folder? What do we want in there?
You want the same things that you have in your folder.
Okay.
What we used to make put in fewer things into the mini-me folder, and what we found was that they need to – it needs to be kind of a duplicate of your folder, except in the front, it's going to be information about you and your team versus when you, in your folder, you have got information about the client.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the difference. But you'll have a place for notes at the back. You'll have a place for an agenda. You'll have an enthusiastically endorsed list of professionals that they use with phone numbers and contact information. You'll have an introductory list, you know, a list of introductions given and received. And that's a great idea, by the way, to have that in there. I used to do it and say, you know, it's kind of up to you if you want to do that or not. Now I say, no, you need that. And the reason is you want to remember when you pick up that folder, you want to go to that sheet and say, you know, he gave me 3 different introductions last year and they all turned into clients. And this is the date that I opened the account. This is the date that they introduced me. And this is the date that I opened the account. And what you want to do is you want to put that date that you opened the account on your recurring items on your calendar, on your Outlook calendar. And why? Because you got 2 people to thank. You got the client, thank him for the business. Today's the anniversary. It's your 3-year anniversary of when we start our relationship. I just want to call and thank you again for the confidence you've placed in myself and my team. We really appreciate it. Shut up and let him talk. He may give you an introduction. He may say nice things about you. He may have an issue. Who knows? Then you call the client that introduced you, the center of influence or friend or whoever it is that introduced you, and you call and you thank them for the introduction. And simply say, you know, confidentiality precludes me from saying too much, but I just wanted to call and tell you this is the anniversary when we opened the account with your friend, Dr. Smith. I talked to him earlier. He's very happy, and he really appreciates the relationship. I just wanted to call and say thanks. This means an awful lot to us, and we don't want to ever forget it. And he'll probably go, hey, I've got another guy for you. It's a way of getting introductions without asking and reinforcing a behavior. Some people go so far as to follow that up with a note, which is really nice. I'm not I'd love to be a better note writer, but I'm not. So I just,
yeah, me too. Yeah. I see people do it. I think about it. I have a card to say thank you, and maybe I should force myself to try to do it.
It's nice. If you can write 1 note a day, it'd be just something that I'd love to do, and I never do. So, it's like, so I do the best I can with email and other things, and I think the phone call thing is a really good idea. It kind of happened by accident, and we're just kind of following through on some brainstorming ideas, and that came
yeah,
up,
no,
so.
I'm a phone call guy. I'm not a good email guy.
Yeah.
You know, I like having the conversation. I'm trying to get better at, you know, making the conversation shorter, which we just spoke
about.
That's
really important. And that will happen because you're going to have more. You're going to be busier. I mean, I don't want to scare you, but you'll be busier because you're going to have more clients to call. So you got to keep them short and you got to stay on topic. But you got to listen too. I mean, you got to make sure, you know, before we go into my agenda, I always do it with you guys. What's on your mind, right? And so I got to listen. I may have an agenda that I want to get through today, but I want to hear what you, where you are, what you're doing, because my agenda is 100% dependent on where you are and what your head is, where your head is. And that's true for you. Maybe a client's getting a divorce or has a sick child or whatever. So the enthusiastically endorsed list is good for them and it's good for you. You want to know who all are the professionals that they use, where they get their annual physical, who's the doctor, who's their intern, you know, who's their cardiologist, who's their CPA, their attorney, their estate planning attorney, and everybody else. I was talking to a guy today and he said, you know, we don't do at all what we should be doing in financial planning. And I said, it's just a process. You know, when you have time and you know your clients, you should be talking to, you know, you can probably do three financial plans at a time. And they should be, that should be just ongoing, always with three open cases where you're working on. I don't think you can do more than that.
Yeah, no, it definitely sounds like a lot.
It's a lot, but you can do that because they work, they go at different paces, you know. You have different things you got to take care of. But, I mean, he just hadn't gotten around to doing much financial planning. And I said, you know, as a fiduciary, as a friend, as a person that cares about these clients, you got to do that. I mean, let's say they both – you know, husband and wife both get killed. You know, car wreck, plane crash, gone. What's the estate look like? You know, is everything taken care of? Kids come in and say, wow, you did a great job. Congratulations, Mike. You know, thanks for doing all this for my dad. He's ready. He was ready. Or, oh, my God, what a mess. We don't know where anything is.
It's the financial planning is the aspect that I have to get way better at. You know, it's just something that has not been part, again, because of the lack of attention to my business. You know, it's there when I want to. I mean, my most recent new account, which was about $1.5 million, I sat down and did our retirement income evaluator. And it worked. You know, it just, I did it in comparison to one that they had gotten from Morgan Stanley. So I now have to get better at that.
Yeah, everybody needs a cash flow analysis and a, you know, future cash flow analysis available. You know, what am I going to run out of money? It isn't death in that case. It's running out of money. That's the big threat.
Right, right.
So that's where, you know, people say, you know, what can I mean, you've seen the savings rate for the average retired person. I mean, we can do an awful lot better helping our people to save more money, knowing that what they're going to need at retirement. We're fortunate most of the people that we work with don't have an issue of not enough money at retirement. But, you know, they can still do a better job.
Yeah,
and
no,
I always
I agree.
Say,
and I'm sorry. Go ahead. Go.
I always say that when, you know, I used to go in an office and I'd stand up there and I'd say, look, every one of you has a client that's retired and there's a couple things going on. None of them are spending the exact right amount of money in retirement. None. So they're either spending too much or they're spending too little. And you should know which is which.
Right.
You should have a flag on every client and say, this client is not spending as much as they could, and this client is overspending. And then I'd tell them, and by the way, each one of you has a client who's overspending their money and is going to run out of money. Pause. And when they do, they're going to turn around and sue the one person that they think they can get their money back from. And that's you. Because you didn't protect them from themselves. And so, this is what we'll do after this meeting. I want each one of you to find that client, and then I want you to bring them in and meet with your manager sometime this week and talk about it. And then bring in the client with the manager and put them on probation. And then, if they adhere to the probation and they're doing a good job, take them off of probation and tell them, congratulate them. And if they're not and they're still overspending, then you fire them. Because it's a liability for the firm and you. And it'll take a year of your time.
Yeah.
Right?
Fire so that's a, to eliminate liability.
So that's a good process, Mike, for you as a manager. Stand up and have that talk.
Yep.
Because they all have
I've had that conversation for years. I have in my career I have physically fired four or five clients with a letter saying my service is not good enough in a polite way. Obviously, I can't service your account to the level that you would like it serviced. Please, you got 30 days to get your account out of here. And I've done that five times that I remember. I mean, and said, go. I don't want you here anymore. And
right.
We did it. You know. So another question. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
People are shocked by that, but I mean, just think about the people that are addicted to other things, right? They're addicted to alcohol, they're addicted to drugs, they're addicted to gambling. What makes you think they're not addicted to spending?
I've had clients. I actually, unfortunately, they both passed away, but fortunately, in retrospect, I had an aunt and uncle. And my uncle kept saying to me, he said, you got to tell your aunt to stop spending. I said, no, you got to tell your aunt to stop, my aunt to stop spending. They came to me with, this is a true story. He retired with, a long time ago, but he retired with like $2 to $2.5 million. And he died at 88 in 2010. She died 3 years later with $43,000 left.
Oh, God.
You know, and I'm telling you, I couldn't slow her down. It just, you know, just spending, traveling, going until they stayed slowed down when they couldn't travel much anymore.
So technically they did it perfect.
Yeah.
But from a liability point of view, it was a nightmare for you.
Right. For the benefit of their kids, they did it perfect. So,
right.
It was a definite liability for me. And it, in some cases, if it weren't my aunt and uncle, I would have written them the letter saying, hey, your spending is out of control. And I have one particular FA in the office who we've discussed, and actually maybe two, that they actually have written that letter. You know, this is where you are. This is what you're spending. And this is when you're going to run out of money. And, it either slows them down. I don't think we've lost accounts because of that over the years. But, I mean, you have to be honest with them. I can't do the job the way you need it done at this point in time because I can't keep pace with what you're doing.
Right. Oh, that's good. That's good. I'm glad you've gone through that. Yeah. Okay, you had a question.
I did. I'm getting too old. My brain is not. it was about the clients. I know I'm going to think about it when we get off the phone. Just something in preparation. I'll think of it. I lost track of what it was because I was talking about the other thing.
No problem. No problem. This week we're talking about Jim Lehrer's book, The Power of Full Engagement. I don't know if you've ever...
I just got it the other day. And
awesome.
Then I found out I have two additional copies of it in my house.
You're kidding. So you know
no,
it.
I've read part of it. When I got the book, I'm sitting there going, I have this book in the house. So.
That's a riot. That's a riot. It's a great book. There's two things that are very relevant to us. One of them is this idea of rituals. Everybody has rituals that they are engaged with. Some are good, some are bad. Habits, good habits, bad habits. It seems that some people seem to have much more discipline than other people. And what Jim talks about is that that's actually not true, that everybody has the same amount of discipline
right.
To work with, but some people create rituals around good habits that they want to perpetuate. And that's why they look like they have much more discipline. So Larry Wilson everybody said it takes 20 days to develop a habit. And Larry said, that's not true. It takes whatever time it takes.
Yeah.
You know, it may take one person 10 days. It may take another guy 40 days. But the idea is to do the behavior that you want to do long enough that it becomes painful not to do it.
Well, I refer to that as guilt. And I will tell you that in process of, you know, you will appreciate this because now I've got to just do it with what we're talking about. But in the process of changing my life, you know, started because of some health issues and what have you. But I went out and bought a Peloton. You know what a Peloton is, right?
Oh, the sure. Bike, yeah.
Got the, yeah. So we have a Peloton in the house. And
cool.
I feel guilty. And since December of 2017, as of yesterday, I have 178 rides done, and it's all varying length, you know. But it became, as you call it, a ritual, because I feel guilty when I don't do it. Even if I get on for 15, 20 minutes, you know, just do something, you know, because I do that. I work out with a trainer twice a week, so you know, I try to get 3 or 4 days on the bike, 2 with the trainer, depending on the time in town. And so I've taught myself that I can create a new habit. You know, I get up in the morning and sometimes I sit there and go, I don't want to do it, but I walk into the other room, I put my bike shoes on, get on the bike, and I ride for 20 minutes or a half hour.
Yep. It's beautiful.
So, yeah, so I know that I can do, I know that I can do this, which is why I chose to make the investment for myself.
Okay, so translating that to Supernova, the process of Supernova works in terms of client contact because John sets up the appointment, gets the folders ready, has them ready for you. You step in. You're the doctor. The patient is on the other end of the phone when you call. You get on the phone. You get off the phone, and you're on to the next call. It's a process that's dependent on your personal trainer, who happens to be John in this case. He takes the place of your personal trainer. You show up for your personal trainer. You're always going to do that. The Peloton's calling you. Those are the things that you need. Supernova, the process of client contact works beautifully because of that. The key to move that forward is to have John in charge of acquisition also, meaning we have got appointments set for meeting with centers of influence, for working on niches, and other things are scheduled right along with your client call. So it becomes, he's your personal trainer for growth too.
Right.
Rather than you being dependent on yourself, because you don't hire a personal trainer because you don't know how to do push-ups. It's because you need the accountability. Okay.
I've been that way forever. That's me.
Right. So, but you know that. And so what you need to know is that this is really critical that you include John in everything that you're doing, including acquisition. A lot of people will go, okay, client contact, that's great. John, I got acquisition. I'm making my own calls. No, because you're not going to do it. So you need accountability. You need to block time for prospecting. So you put it on the calendar. I'm going to work on an hour on niche marketing, right, in 2 to 3. It's on the calendar. You got a folder. You may not be making any phone calls, but you're working on it during that time. Okay?
Yeah.
So that's that part of the process. The other part of the process is this idea of energy, that it isn't the amount of time that we put in, it's the amount of energy. Everybody says, well, you know, go home, spend time with your children. No, don't spend time with your children. Spend energy with them, because you can be present but not engaged. So that's the premises of his book, is that it's the power of full engagement, not the power of time. So that you leave behind work and you're focused on your family when you're there 100%, just as engaged as you are when you meet with a client. So when you're at work, you're at work. When you're home, you're home. And you don't try and say I'm home, but I'm working. You know, that does you no good.
Took me a long time to be able to disconnect, as I call it. But I've gotten better at it.
Well, one of the things he talks about is the idea of sitting in the car before you come in the house and disconnecting, just like you're completely unplugging yourself from work.
Right.
And just take a minute and just sit there and say, okay, work is over. I'm putting it behind me. Now, let's think about the family. Think about the kids. I'm going to walk in the door, and I'm going to be 100% engaged when I walk in. Not, hey, wait a minute, don't bother me. Let me have a drink. I got to sit in my big chair. Leave me alone. That's
Rob,
not the impression.
Can I put you on hold for 1 second? Don't go away.
Yep. Yep.
Thank you for calling Janie Montgomery Scott. We will be with you shortly. Please continue to hold during this brief delay.
I'm sorry.
That's no problem. So you get the idea.
Yep.
Full engaged. All right. Okay, good. So that's, you'll like it. Some people really love that book, and other people like it, and some people don't read it. So it's up to you, whatever you want to do.
I got to look and see if there's an Audible version of it.
Yeah, there is.
That's where,
of course.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's why I listen to your book and read when I go back in. I listen to novels. I'm going to see if I can download it. It's the power of engagement.
The powerful engagement.
Powerful engagement. How does he spell his last name?
Loehr.
Loehr.
Ehr. Loehr. Jim Lehrer.
Okay. Yeah, because that's really where I do my best. You know, I listen to novels. I listen to. That's how I got started with you. I told you that. It just somebody told me about it. I got the.
Got the book.
You know, I got the book, and then I started listening to the book. So it was. That was really important. So it's a. And I listened to. I'm telling you, I listened to it 4 times before I connected
with
you.
That's right. That's so fun. It's great. Thank you.
Yeah, it made a lot of. It was good. It just made a lot of sense to me. Here it is, The Power of Full Engagement. Okay, I'm going to buy this book and download it. I just wanted to make sure I had the right one. So.
Yep.
Good. It'll be in my car. I will start listening to it on my way home. So. Okay. I've sidetracked enough. Let's go.
So. The other thing that we need to start working on is our niche marketing. We haven't talked much about that, have we?
No, and that's so. Give me some clues as to what we're looking at from that standpoint.
Okay. What we want to do is go through our existing clientele and see what they have in common, where they come from, how you got them.
We talked about that last week.
And did we come? I just don't have any notes on it that I.
Yeah, what we came up with is the fact that the majority of my clients have come from referrals and friends.
Right.
And relationships. It's not necessarily from networking. I actually have one $3 million relationship that came through networking.
Okay.
Everything is referrals from where I live. I've gotten involved. I'm getting involved in a new charity here that I'm hoping will help me in Boca.
What's the charity?
It's called Francis Fuller. It's a children's charity. I've been involved with a children's charity down in Fort Lauderdale for 20 years, and somebody once said, you know, get involved with the charity, you'll get some business out of it. I'm still involved with the charity, and I've never really gotten any business out of it. But I think being in Boca and being exposed to the CEO is somebody I've been friendly with for a very long time, but I spoke to one of the biggest she's very involved and very philanthropic. And I think that if I develop a nice relationship with her, she can introduce me to more people.
All right. So here's I have a chapter on this, on working with charities. Okay.
Right.
And I studied people that, you know, this is the normal reaction. I've been involved with charities for 10 years and I've never gotten any referrals. And so then I interviewed people that build most of their business from charities. And I'm like, okay, what the hell are they doing that these other people aren't doing, which would make them get more introductions?
Right.
Well, it's a very deliberate, we call it, they're unconsciously competent. So
right.
I had to pull it out of them what they were doing. They didn't know. They just did it, right? Just like you have friends. You don't know what you're, you know.
But we talked about, let me just go back. My note on that last week was unconsciously competent, become consciously competent is what you said. Because I have been unconsciously competent, very competent for my whole career. You know, one of the things we talked about last week was that I develop relationships, and because it's not what's never been the main focus, I work a little longer on those relationships, which then ultimately turn into a client.
Sure. So what you want to do, though, think about it as, that's great for me, but can I teach that? So
right.
The idea is that the consciously competent part of it allows you, not that you're going to go around and teach it, but it will also help you repeat the behavior. So this is what this one gal did. I said, so you built, how much of your business comes from, and so she went back and did the homework. 35% of her business came from charities. She said,
right.
I'm shocked. I had no idea. I said, really? I said, so what do you actually do? Well, I don't know. I get on boards, and then I move to the next board, and then I move to the next board. I said, okay, how long does that take you? And she said, well, let me think. I get on the board. I'm usually referred by somebody, or I get somebody introduces me, and they ask me to be on the board. So I get on the board. I'm on a committee for a couple years, and then I become chairman of the committee, and then I become vice president, and then I become president, and then I rotate off and go on to another charity. I said, how many charities are you on at any one time? And she said, oh, I'm on two or three at any one time. I said, okay. And so I wrote it up, exactly what she did.
Yep.
So you, and I talked about how she got on charities. Well, she would ask her clients, hey, I'm thinking about getting more involved in the community. What do you, you know, what do you suggest in terms of charities? Which ones are you involved in? And then she'd go interview them and decide if it was a good fit for her, meet with the director and the client, have the lunch, and then she'd go join the board, and then she'd go on. So what do I tell you to do? Exactly that. Go ask your clients what they're involved in, which is important for you to know.
Right.
And then ask if, you know, if it makes sense for you, would you be open, you know, I want to get more involved in the community. Would you be open to introducing me or having me meet the director and have a lunch and see if it'd be a good fit or no? He said, oh, sure, yeah, we'll do it next week. Da, 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 da. I'll call them right away. Because they're always looking for people, right?
Yeah, there's no doubt. Right? Yeah, this one particular charity that I'm moving over to, because I'm going to take some time off from, because it's too far a drive for me, and yeah, I got to, you know, yeah, a lot of time. But this one I'm starting on the foundation board.
Oh, that's good.
And then probably get on to the finance committee. So
So here's your intention, though. Okay.
Yeah.
You have to join it with the intention of becoming president.
Okay.
Or chairman of whatever whatever the top position is. And a lot of times we just join and be on a committee, and then. No, you got to prove you're the leader. You can lead the organization. Once you're leading the organization, that's when you'll get your introductions.
And that's exactly – well, here's why I don't think it worked as a last charity when I analyzed it, because I did become the president. I became the chairman of the Board of Governors, and I did it for 3 years. The problem is I'm not – and I was never in – I was involved with the board, but I was never part of the in crowd in Fort Lauderdale. That's just not my, you know, my venue.
Yeah.
I'm more of a Palm Beach County, not from a snobby standpoint, but that's why I worked in Palm Beach, you know, but I did. And, you know, so that's what happened. I just stopped, you know, I'm still on a board, but I don't go a lot. And, you know, I'm looking to do something locally, so this could be my new opportunity, the way I looked at it.
All right, so my new book, The Supernova Multiplier, right?
Right,
I have a chapter
right
on that, and so I want you to read it. That's your homework. Get my book and read it. I know this
Supernova.
Sounds like you're going to do a lot of reading, but the truth is I tell you exactly how to do it, and I don't want to, you know, when we're talking, I'm going to leave something out. When you read it, you'll hear, you'll read everything.
Right.
Okay.
Excuse me while we're talking, I'm going on Amazon.
Yeah, here you go. Right.
You there?
Yep, I'm just looking up what chapter it is.
Okay.
Giving to Give, Chapter 121.
Chapter 121.
Yeah, page 121. It's Chapter 9.
Chapter 9, okay.
Yeah, Giving to Give. The idea is that you join the organization to give, not to get, and you have to give, right?
Yeah, I've always done that. So,
you know,
it's interesting. I'm on the board of my club. And obviously I've gotten some accounts, but not necessarily from the board, but it's where I live is a lot of obviously wealthy people. And I'm now going to attempt, not in a subtle way, to solicit what it is. You know, how about giving me some money? Let me run some money for you. You know, and I'll figure out a way to word it properly, but, you know, just new stuff. It's a new way of me doing things.
Yeah. So just follow the chapter. I mean, chapter and verse. These are people that did it and did it right and had terrific
right.
success.
Right.
So you might as well suck up every bit of it. And, you know, and I give you the words to say, and I, you know, I'm very meticulous about, you notice, every single thing I tell you to do, I've researched it, and I've gotten the right words, and it's very meticulous. And that, to me, is what you need. You don't need me to say, go work harder, you know, go work longer hours, go do this, like all managers do, right? You need me to tell you exactly what other people have done, and then you go and do it and try it, and then come back and say, hey, this didn't work. What were the words you used? Well, I used these words. Well, that isn't exactly what we talked about.
Right.
So the idea is try and stick as close to you can as to all the scripts that we recommend, and use the words that are the most powerful words, because those are the tools you need to be most effective. It's kind, you know, I had a guy give a speech the other day at a, you know, he's a wonderful guy, and he was speaking from the heart, but he hadn't practiced. And, you know, it was about half as effective as it could have been. Meaning,
you know,
he was telling
that, yeah.
him, yeah, he was telling his life story, and that part of it was very powerful. The problem is he was skipping around. He was disconnected. He was using a lot of ams and ahs, and he just wasn't as good as he should have been or could have been. And that's, look, the reality is I'm a professional speaker, okay?
Yeah.
I practice. I'm good at this. And when I see somebody stand up and sing an aria that isn't the best way it should be sung, I notice, right? And that's what we're professionals, right? So we want to have the right words at the right time strung together properly. With a maximum effect. So charities are niches, just
okay.
like working with a company is a niche. I give them a complete separate category in my book, but in reality, they are just another niche. Just like, you know, the synagogue or the church, that's a niche.
Right.
Right. So, so
right,
that's your...
The book is ordered, just so you know.
My man, that's good. That's good. You'll love the book. You'll like the book because you've already read the Supernova Advisor four times.
Right.
This fills in all the blanks. Everything that I couldn't complete in the Supernova Advisor because I didn't have time or I didn't have the amount of examples, I have them all in this book. 12 years of coaching this stuff with story after story after story of each one of these strategies working. So it's not just me telling you and you hoping I'm right. It's testimonials from people I've coached telling their story in their words.
Right.
So it should be like, you know, going to a great seminar where all these successful people stand up and tell you what they're doing. I don't hold back anything. I didn't hold anything back for the workbook or something. It's all in this book.
Okay, good. All right.
All right. So that's enough for today.
Okay.
I think. So just, you know, push yourself a little here in terms of getting everybody signed up as soon as possible so that we can plunge ahead with acquisition, which is really what you need to get really back on a horse there and
right.
really make that the priority. So get organized, get your clients signed up. That's a sort of something we have to do in order to move on to the next section. as you can tell, the acquisition piece is where my passion is.
I fully understand that. Yeah. Yep, got it.
Yeah, for you and I, for you and I, that's where the most fun will be, because you'll go out and do these things, and then you'll come back and tell me, and this has worked, and this didn't work, and let's try this, and let's try that, and here's a case study, and that's where you as a coach and a manager understand it, you know, just, and we'll have the most fun with it. So let's get to that as soon as we can.
I'm going to go back and make sure that I get my folders organized and figure out exactly what I want to put in it. So, yeah, I'll go back and get that done. I'll start working on that tomorrow. I actually have a four-hour meeting in the afternoon with my managers, but, no, I get it going. So we should be okay.
Good. And this is all going to help them, you know. You're going to be a much better coach. Rob Schaefer and I talked about it. Said, you know, what would we be like as managers today if we went back and managed after 10 years and 12 years of coaching? We'd be awesome. You know, we'd be able to help these guys like crazy.
Yeah. I'd say the only thing that you would struggle with is that from a scheduling standpoint, it's all good. The problem is, depending on the size of the office, or my region has got 50 FAs in it, and I once had an office that was bigger than that, way bigger than that. So, but it's almost like I used to feel like I had to have boxing gloves on, because to try to get into that quote-unquote routine and then never know what's coming at you, you know. So it's, you know, now, well, at least now, the smaller office, I have a routine pretty much of what I can get into.
And remember this, 20% of your FAs give you 80% of your revenues.
Oh, there's no doubt.
So concentrate. You know, everybody leaves the top guys alone. That's the worst thing you can do. You want to spend 80% of your time with the top guys, and that's where you'll get the most leverage. So.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So until next week, I sent an email that on the week of the, I think it's May 2nd, I'm going to be in Bermuda with the company.
Oh,
so
great. Congratulations.
Yeah.
Where are you staying?
Thank you. I think we're staying at the Fairmont.
Nice.
Yeah.
So much fun. I love Bermuda.
We went there once before. So we're leaving on the 27th, and I'll be back on the 2nd. So I sent it to Cindy Lori from a scheduling standpoint to see what she wanted to do. So when I hear back from her, I'll know. All right?
Yeah, that's fine, because that gives you a break, and, you know, we'll get caught up after. You know, sometimes you need a break, because this stuff comes pretty fast and furiously, you know.
Hi, Rob. I appreciate it, and I'll speak to you next
week.
All right,
Mike. Thanks. All right, thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Bye, John.